Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, thank you for hanging out with me today. It is finally a sunshine-filled morning here in St. Louis. I believe that we can suspend construction on the Ark for now, although it could resume at any time. Again, thank you everybody for hanging out with me today. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble, TGIF, my people. I know it's a little iffy there long about Wednesday or Thursday, but we've made it. The weekend is upon us. And, of course, we've got a ton of stuff to get to. Never a dull moment. There's always something going on, which makes it good for people like me to go on the radio and talk about. But the chat room is open, of course, and you can go there. You can call in here and talk to me. The number is 347-857-2620. 347-857-2620. But so we've got a lot to get into, so let's do it. And of course, I think the big news today is the Confederate flag coming down from the State House in South Carolina. And I think it brings with it a lot of mixed emotions, a lot of mixed feelings. A lot of people believe that that there's very strong emotions and very strong opinions on both sides, because you have people who look at that flag and see it as nothing but a symbol of racism and of hatred and divisiveness. And on the other side of that coin, you have a lot of other people who see it as a symbol of their heritage and of their pride in being Southern, in being from the South. And this became a controversy. I don't even know if that's the right word for it. It's, for lack of a better word I can think of off the cuff to describe it. This all began after that horrific shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, of 9 people who were doing nothing but having a Bible study in a historic black church in Charleston, South Carolina, and 21-year-old Dylan Roof came into the church, sat with these good people, sat with these good-hearted, loving Christian people for an hour and listened to them study the Bible and talk to each other and talk to him. They invited him in. They welcomed him. They made it very clear that they were more than happy to make him part of their group and part of their discussion. And they were all murdered in cold blood for their trouble. And there's been lots of heartache and lots of hurt and a lot of discussion in the wake of this horrific massacre. That's what it is. And there was a picture not too long after the suspect in the shooting was identified. A picture of this suspect went online, and he, of course, was holding a Confederate flag. Well, that kind of got the ball kicked off, got the ball off and running. And that's when calls for this flag flying above atop the South Carolina State House in Columbia, South Carolina. That's when the calls for this flag to be removed started. And we know since that time that flag has been removed in a lot of places. It's been removed in a lot of places that seem kind of silly. TV Land, the cable television channel TV Land, that plays reruns of the Dukes of Hazzard TV show. They took that off of the air because of the prominence in that show, because of the show taking place in the South. That show has since been pulled from the TV Land channel because of the prominence of the Confederate flag. There have been many, many corporations and companies. Walmart will no longer sell anything with a Confederate flag image on it, although they will sell Che Guevara T-shirts. And if anybody knows anything about Che Guevara, he was not the hero that the left would like to think millennials to think he is. He was a murderer, and he was actually a racist. Had no use for black people or minorities. But Walmart will sell those. But that's another conversation. But a lot of other places have since ceased selling Confederate flag merchandise, either in their stores or online or what have you. And it kind of come down to this, that it was voted on in the South Carolina House and Senate that this flag would come down. And this morning, in a ceremony that lasted maybe 10 minutes, South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley was on hand to oversee this ceremony of them removing the flag from the state house and from the Capitol in South Carolina. Of course, there was a large crowd that gathered to watch this. This flag has been flying for 54 years, and it originally was put there by Democrat Governor Ernest Hollings in 1961 to commemorate the end of the Civil War, or the beginning of the Civil War, I'm sorry. So that needs to be on the record right there that it took a Republican governor. Once again, it took a Republican to clean up a Democrat mess, because it was a Democrat who placed that flag atop the South Carolina State House. It was Democrat Governor Ernest Hollings in 1961. But we don't like to talk about that. We don't want to, because that's really the history that we don't want to talk about. So the flag was removed this morning, like I said, in a ceremony that lasted about 10 minutes. Once the flag was down, there were two South Carolina state troopers who rolled it up and tied it up with a string, and handed it to another trooper who stood on the state house steps, and he handed the flag to a state archivist. That got a round of applause from the governor. The flag will be taken to, there was a van there that will take the flag to a nearby Confederate relic room and military museum. There it will be housed with it as part of an exhibit in a museum. Minutes after this flag came down, kind of an interesting tidbit, and tell me if you can see a little bit of, I don't know if irony is the bad word, it is the word, but it's kind of one of those things that makes you go, the report I have here is from Newsmax, and of course it's from this morning. And it says here, it goes on to say, President Barack Obama tweeted minutes after the flag was down, saying it was, quote, a sign of goodwill and healing and a meaningful step towards a better future, unquote. And, of course, President Obama delivered a eulogy at the funeral for State Senator and Pastor Clementa Pinckney, who was the pastor of the Emmanuel AME Church there in Charleston, where this horrific massacre took place. So minutes after this flag was down, here's what I want to talk about this flag. First of all, minutes after this flag came down, there was tweets going out from the White House, from the president, about it being a sign of goodwill and healing and all of that. Okay, maybe that's true. Let's give everyone the benefit of the doubt and say yes, that's what it is. Okay, fine. But earlier this week, and we're going to talk about this also in just a few minutes, of course, because it's a big deal. And but earlier this week, we had an innocent woman doing nothing but walking along a pier in San Francisco with her father, gunned down by an illegal alien. You know what? I'm going to say that. Right here at the Conservative Cauldron, we use terms like illegal alien. I'm not afraid to do that because that's what he is. Earlier this week, there was an innocent woman walking along a pier with her father who was gunned down by an illegal alien who never should have been in this country in the first place, who was deported had seven felony convictions on his record. But have you heard anything about this from the President of the United States or anyone from his administration? The answer to that is no, you haven't, and you will continue to not hear anything. The only thing that you will continue to hear about the murder of Catherine Steinle in San Francisco from the Obama administration is crickets. That is all you will hear. So that caught my attention right off the bat there, that within minutes of this flag coming down, you had tweets from the president, but an innocent woman lost her life. In fact, I believe her funeral was yesterday. But you have nothing but silence from the president on that. Nothing at all. And we're going to get into that in a couple of minutes. You know, we're going to get into that shooting and sanctuary cities and all of that. But the other thing too about this flag, I have several questions. First of all, one of them being, originally there was some debate on whether or not that the removal of this flag was going to be put to a vote of the people. Because when you have a state, the capital of a state, be it South Carolina or anywhere else, and that capital building, the state house in that state, is that not the people's house? Is that not the house of the people of that state? Because it represents the people of that state. The South Carolina State House that stands in Columbia, South Carolina, the capital of South Carolina, is that not the people of South Carolina? Is that not their house? So, therefore, why would it have been so bad to take a little bit more time and perhaps maybe put this to a vote of the people? See what the good people of South Carolina want to do with this flag. If they want to take it down, if they no longer want it hanging in there above their state house, flying above their state house, that's fine. If that's what the people want, then you take it down. But if this had been put to a vote of the people and the good people of South Carolina said, no, we want that flag flying for whatever reason, be it Southern pride, be it heritage, what have you, I doubt that there are fringe kooks in every bunch. So there may very well be some people in South Carolina who like it because they think it stands for racism and hatred and all that. Okay, put those people aside just for one second. If the good people of South Carolina had voted to remove that flag, fine, so be it. Take it down because that's what the people want. However, if the people had voted no to leave it up, would that have been, you know, where would they have gone from there? And excuse me. Here's another thing. Well, the big question I have regarding that is if popular opinion was such that everyone wanted this flag to come down, every resident of South Carolina wanted this flag to come down, then why not put it to a vote of the people? If you are so confident that this was popular opinion, why would that vote not have passed overwhelmingly with the people of South Carolina? What do you? I guess my question, and I'm giving the 5-minute answer question. I guess my question is, what are you so afraid of by putting this to a vote of the people? You know, if it is such overwhelming opinion that this flag must come down, then why not put it to a vote of the people? And, you know, the other question I have here, even before I get to that, my wonderful, amazing, smart husband, Randy Noble, who also has a show on Blog Talk Radio, The Cross in the Desert. You can hear it here on Mondays and Thursdays, every Monday and Thursday morning at 9:30. My wonderful, amazing, smart husband brought up a very good point this morning. And what he said was, you know, he said, we were watching some coverage of this earlier this morning on TV on Fox News, and they were giving a little historical background on some of the reasons for the Civil War, that slavery was the ending of slavery and the existence of it was not just the only thing that the Civil War was fought, and that and my Civil War history is of course not what it should be. I'm sure there are many more historians that can shed much greater light on this than I could. But one of the reasons for the Civil War was that actually the people of South Carolina felt that the federal government was too overreaching, that it was too encroaching at that time on their rights, on their state's rights. And that was one of the main reasons for their secession from the Union, was that they were tired of an overarching, overreaching federal government. Well, isn't that kind of what you have here? I just thought it was a very good point that ironically, that by not putting this to a vote of the people, do you not have overarching, overreaching, maybe not federal government, but you have overarching, overreaching government in general. And wasn't that what they fought a war for? That was part of the reason that they fought a war, to end that states' rights infringement. So there's that, you know. But we can talk about that a little bit. But the other question I have, and it's kind of a broad general one here, and that is, you know, for so many people that this issue is about this plague specifically, and I get that. I mean, don't get me wrong, by everything that I'm saying here, I get that a lot of people look at that flag and see it as a symbol of hatred. I get that. But maybe it's kind of two questions in one. The other question for me is, what about the people who don't view it that way? What about the people who do view it as a symbol of their heritage and a symbol of their pride, and they don't read anything bigoted or racist into it? It has nothing for them. It has absolutely nothing to do with that. Why are their beliefs not as important as someone who believes that it's a symbol of hatred? Who determines whose beliefs trump who? That's what I want to know, because when you have some arbiter of whose beliefs are more important than who, some you know, just out of the blue, out of nowhere, someone or something who decides whose beliefs and whose opinions are more important, you're getting into a creepy area. And the other thing that maybe is kind of an umbrella to that is that for many, many people, this issue is specifically about this flag. But I think it also has something to do with freedom of speech, because I think that there is two sides to this, that there are some people who don't view this as a symbol of racism and hatred, that they view it as a symbol of heritage and pride. You're removing, and granted, at this point there's no law that says that you can't, if you live in South Carolina, you can't fly this flag on your property. You know what? God bless America. You do that if that's what you want to do. But isn't there an element of freedom of speech that comes into play here, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. And if by the yelling and screaming and getting up on tables and jumping up and down by one group, if they can do that, can they do it with? And I guess, again, in a roundabout kind of way, what I'm trying to say is, today it's this flag. What's next? What other symbol is some arbitrary entity, person or group or people or whoever it is, what's next that someone, you know, they've taken care of this week, starting next week. What's going to be the next thing that's targeted? What's going to be the next symbol? What's going to be the next thing that maybe for someone is a very sacred symbol and has a lot of meaning to them, but for someone else says, well, I think it's racist and it needs to be taken down, shut down, whatever it is. That's my question. And as I go to a break, I'll leave you with that question. If we can do this just for one flag in one state, what else are we going to do it to? What's next? That's my question, I guess, in a roundabout kind of way. What's next? I'm going to take a break. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, so much for hanging out with me today, TGIF. We got a lot more to get to, so don't go anywhere. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Yeah. That's where the clown is sexy. Y'all know who y'all is. You're killing me, man. Come on.
It's been a hell of a week at work, and boss keeps yelling at me. What a jerk, and home is killing me too. It's the worst calls. Kids done got out of school.
Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. The weekend is upon us. Thank you all so much for hanging out and chilling with me today, this morning. Like I said, it's finally the sun is shining here in St. Louis, and I believe that we will be able to suspend construction on the ARC. It could resume at any point. We don't know. But, of course, we were talking about the big news, at least today, the Confederate flag coming down from atop the State House in South Carolina. And South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, of course, presided over that ceremony. Something else real quick about this before we go on to something else is that but something I saw today, and that is that while I don't think that anybody is going to question the intentions of Governor Haley, you know, I believe she her intentions were sincere, that she wanted this flag down for all the right reasons. That's certainly not what I'm questioning. I am wondering is in light of this now, that she was the governor who presided over this, would that make her desirable VP candidate for a presidential candidate? You know, I don't know. We're going to hear so many. It's so early, and it's we're going to even when it comes time for whoever it is to decide on VP candidates, we're going to hear a million bazillion names tossed about. But the one thing that I did think of when I heard that, let's say just put your everybody put your hypothetical hat on for just a second, and let's say that Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or the four names that come to my mind in this scenario, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Carly Fiorina, or Ben Carson. If any one of those four people got the Republican nomination for 2016 for the Republican presidential nomination, and one of those four people, I believe it makes Nikki Haley possibly an attractive candidate as it is, but if any one of those four people picked her, in the case of Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, you would have potentially the first Hispanic president of the United States, and his VP choice would be the governor who took down a Confederate flag from atop a state house. That's a no-brainer. You've got a very, very potentially big-time winning situation there for Republicans. Just throwing that out there. Like I said, I think that for anyone, and for reasons totally other than this, Nikki Haley may very well be an attractive VP candidate for someone. I don't doubt that for a minute. But if you look at that look at the case in those four people, if one of those four people, like I said, with Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio, you would have the first Hispanic president, and his VP choice is the governor who got the Confederate flag taken down from the state house. In the case of Carly Fiorina, you would have not only the first female president, but you would also have a female VP candidate who got that Confederate flag taken down. And in the case of Ben Carson, you have the second black president, actually I would argue maybe the first real black president, and the governor who got the Confederate flag taken down. In all of those cases, and again, like I said, even in a scenario where it's any one of any other candidates, she's an attractive VP nominee just because of her record alone. But in the case of those four people, that makes it even more attractive. Going on, of course, the other big story this week is the shooting of 32-year-old Catherine Steinle in San Francisco. She was walking along Pier 14, which is a popular destination area in San Francisco for people. She was walking on that pier with her father when 45-year-old Francisco Sanchez, who is an illegal alien, he is in this country illegally from Mexico. He has been in this country illegally from Mexico a total of five times. He has seven felony convictions on his record. He fatally shot Catherine Steinle as she walked along the pier with her dad. And San Francisco, of course, for anyone who doesn't know, is a sanctuary city. And There are very many of them across the nation. The number that stands out to me, I believe, is roughly about 300. And what that means, what a sanctuary city means, is that the city government really does not work with immigration officials and ICE if someone is in that city, if they're in the country illegally and they happen to be in that city, that they are not going to make a lot of effort to turn that person over to the proper authorities and have that person deported. And it's obviously working very well in San Francisco now, isn't it? The call now is for the sanctuary city, something to be done about this, because this is one guy in one city. And like I said, if you have roughly 300 sanctuary cities in the United States, and I believe the number I heard last night quoted, and I still have a hard time getting my head around this number, 30 million illegal aliens here in the United States, not just from Mexico, but anywhere. Illegal people here in this country illegally, period, regardless of where they're from. Staggering number. It really is. And he was arraigned earlier this week for the murder of Catherine Steinle. And he speaks very broken English. And he was with his court-appointed lawyer. And again, this shooting has drawn national attention to sanctuary cities like San Francisco. And when you have people who are coming and going, like they when they actually do get deported and they just keep coming back and coming back, and it's just a revolving door. And the report here I have from Fox News says that U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement had turned Sanchez over to authorities in San Francisco on March 26th on an outstanding drug warrant. Well, the thing with this drug warrant is that it was, I believe I heard earlier this week, that it was probably 10 years old, this drug beef. And so a 10-year-old drug warrant, there's not going to be people who want to spend a lot of time on that. And so apparently nothing was done about it. And the sheriff's department says that they released Francisco Sanchez on April 15th of this year after the San Francisco District Attorney's Office declined to prosecute him, again, for what authorities said was a decade-old marijuana possession case. A low-level, low-beef marijuana possession case is not – nobody wants to deal with that. Nobody wants to take the time to deal with that. And a spokesman for ICE, Virginia Kice, said the agency had issued a detainer for Sanchez, requesting notification of his release and that he stay in custody until immigration authorities could pick him up. And this detainer, that's the thing here. This detainer that was issued by ICE was not honored by the city of San Francisco. They blew it off. They ignored it. And this is one of the things that has to stop. It has to stop because, unfortunately, Catherine Steinle is now a statistic. She is the latest in a long line of people who have American citizens who have lost loved ones at the hands of people who never should have been in this country in the first place. And spokesman for the San Francisco Sheriff's Department, Freya Horn, said that federal detention requests are not sufficient to hold someone. Here's the rub. Under the city's sanctuary ordinance, people in the country illegally aren't handed over to immigration officials unless there is a warrant for their arrest. So in order for them to be arrested and to be turned over to authorities and actually be deported, they are not not honoring a detainer from ICE, for ICE asking officials, please hold this person until we can come and pick him up. They're not honoring these things. They want a warrant for this person, and that's not happening. And it's one giant cluster, if you will. And because there's no communication, things are not being honored, the detainers are not being honored, and nobody is communicating with anyone else. And that's why people like Francisco Sanchez are falling through the cracks. And basically, when you have a sanctuary city, be it San Francisco or any place else, basically what that city is doing is giving the federal government a one big giant finger. What they're doing basically is saying to the federal government, screw you, our laws trump your laws, which of course we all know is not true, and we're going to do what we want. And again, Catherine Steinle and her family have now become statistics, because she is the latest in a long line of Americans who have lost loved ones at the hands of an illegal alien. And I do know that Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, either he will be or he has introduced legislation that will deny some federal funds to sanctuary cities if they decide they want to continue to be a sanctuary city. And another thing here from this report from Fox News was that this is actually a quote from the suspect, from Francisco Sanchez, and what he said was at his appearance in court this week was that, quote, All I want to say is that in the courts, I want them to give me the punishment I deserve and get it over with as soon as possible. Way too easy. You know, I realize that jails are crowded and but you know, if we would just enforce the laws that are on the books, and we would just enforce first, you know, strengthen our border, close off that border. Close off the southern border. It's got to be secured. Otherwise, Francisco Sanchez and all of his buddies are going to keep going through back and forth through that revolving door. And if we don't secure that border first, you know, anything else that we do is a moot point. And I don't know. I almost kind of agree at this point with Ann Coulter and one of the ideas that she puts forth in her new book called Adios America, How the Left is Turning the United States into a Third World Hellhole, I believe is the name of it, that she has put forth the idea that maybe we need to suspend until we can get our collective act together on immigration, is to bend all immigration, even legal immigration, suspend it all, put the brakes on now. Just suspend it until we can at least, A, get the border secure, and B, come up with a way to deal with the people who are here, because, you know, there's got to be something done. This cannot go on. We cannot have innocent American citizens being murdered, and it's not just with guns. It's drunk driving. It's you name it. There can no longer be American citizens being killed at the hands of people who have no business being in this country. They are here illegally. That's the bottom line. And, you know, this kind of takes me into the next thing that I want to talk about. And also, like I said, mentioned earlier when we were talking about the flag, is that, you know, Barack Obama wasted no time getting on the computer and getting to Twitter so that he could tweet about how great the removal of this flag was in South Carolina. And he wasted no time sending 3 representatives to Michael Brown's funeral last Ferguson, Missouri. But did he have anything to say on the death of this woman, on the death of this innocent woman who was doing nothing but walking along a pier with her father? Did he have anything to say about that on Twitter? No. Did he send any representatives from the White House to her funeral? No. So I think in the case of the president, you know, that's all we really need to know. It is all you need to know about Barack Obama and where his priorities lie. And again, this kind of dovetails into what I want to talk about. Also, what I want to talk about is that earlier this week is that we learned that even to this day, that the Obama administration really has no clear-cut strategy on how to defeat ISIS. And you know, as anti-war and as anti-military as this president is, the following clip here really should, I know when I heard it, it's more than a head scratcher. It's just, you're just going, what? But here it is on what President Obama thinks will really defeat ISIS.
And that means that we're going to have to pick up our game to prevent these attacks. It's also true why, ultimately, in order for us to defeat terrorist groups like ISIL and al-Qaeda, is going to also require us to discredit their ideology, the twisted thinking that draws vulnerable people into their ranks. As I've said before, and I know our military leaders agree, this broader challenge of countering violent extremism is not simply a military effort. Ideologies are not defeated with guns, they're defeated by better ideas, a more attractive and more compelling vision. So the United States will continue to do our part by working with partners to counter ISIL's hateful propaganda, especially online. We'll constantly reaffirm through words and deeds that we will never be at war with Islam. We're fighting terrorists who distort Islam and whose victims are mostly Muslims. But around the world, we're also going to insist on partnering with Muslim communities as they seek security, prosperity, and the dignity that they deserve.
So let's review, shall we? Let's review, kids. ISIS will not be defeated with guns, but by better ideas. Let that sink in for a minute. We're not going to defeat ISIS with guns. Keep in mind, these are the people who like to lob other people's heads off. And they like to lob other people's heads off for things like being a Christian, for things like breaking a Ramadan fast, you know, very serious, heinous crimes such as those. So keep that in mind. That ISIS, the guys who like to lob people's heads off, will not be defeated with guns. They'll be defeated better ideas. Again, if that doesn't tell you where this administration is and how and what they think about not just ISIS, but Islamic terrorism in general. First of all, we know they can't even say radical Islamic terrorism. So why should this come as any surprise that a statement like this would be uttered by the president? It really boggles the mind. And as I watched this video clip, there was a I don't know if it was the Joint Chiefs of Staff, there was a general or someone standing behind the president as he was speaking. And if you can go online and find this clip and watch it, the look on his face is just, it's unbelievable. It really is. But so that really, when it comes right down to it, that is our strategy for dealing with ISIS and for dealing with radical Islamic terrorism. Because, again, here at the Conservative Cauldron, we will use phrases like illegal alien, and we will use phrases like radical Islamic terrorism. There's no political correctness here at the Conservative Cauldron. If that's what you're looking for, then you might have come to the wrong place. Also this week, the president appearing to be on a roll, well, this kind of came out, this idea happened maybe several months ago, and I think it probably has a lot to do with situations like Ferguson and Baltimore and things of that nature, is that we're going to do Department of Housing and Urban Development is going to do a little housing redistribution. You've heard about wealth redistribution. Well, we're going to do some housing distribution, and this is from CNS News. And what they're going to do basically is kind of they're looking for equality in your neighborhood. And Julian Castro, who I believe is the former mayor of San Antonio, and by all accounts is kind of a rising star in the Democrat Party. They think that I've heard him called the Hispanic Barack Obama. But what he says here is, to help localities identify patterns of racial and ethnic discrimination, HUD will provide states, local governments, public housing agencies and the general public with maps, charts, and other data showing integrated and living patterns, racially or ethnically concentrated areas of poverty, the location of subsidized housing, and where some people have access to opportunity based on key community assets such as good schools and good opportunities. And basically what this is it says the data will help HUD grantees and community activists, don't forget about the community activists, analyze the, quote, fair housing landscape and set locally determined fair housing priorities and goals. And also what happens here if a certain community does not want subsidized housing in their neighborhood, that there will be funds withheld from them. And it's basically going to be you better do what we want or else from the federal government. And basically what is going to happen here, because I do have to go to a break, what is going to happen here is that if you have a very nice, it doesn't have to be upper class, upper middle class, just a nice basic middle class neighborhood, nice, they're not big houses. They're rather small houses, medium-sized houses, but it's a nice neighborhood. There's good schools there. It's obviously people who work hard and work to keep up their neighborhood and their community and their properties, and they care about it. Well, what they're going to do is they're going to move some subsidized housing into those communities so that these people who didn't do the work to achieve being able to live in these communities on their own through education, through hard work, through whatever it takes to be able to live in that kind of community, well, someone who hasn't done the work to live in that community, they just get to move right in. And so there's going to be all sorts of data floating around, income data and racial data and you name it, because we know how the federal government loves data or data, depending on how you say it, and they like to determine what they can make us do and what they think they'll make us put up with based on that data. And so that's basically what's going to happen here. It's in the works now, and it could be coming to a neighborhood near you, including your own. So that's what's going on at the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And again, when it's run by Democrats and liberals, you know, everything has to be fair. Doesn't matter how you got here, or even if you did the work and worked your butt off to get here, somebody else gets to take advantage of that. I'm going to take a break. Still got a lot more to get to, so don't go anywhere. Keep it right here. You are listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I'm Becky Noble, TGIF. We're back. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, one and all, for tuning in today to listen and talk and discuss and debate. It's been a busy week. And very quickly, before I get out of here, of course, Hillary Clinton did an interview on CNN earlier this week with Breonna Keller. And here is just some of the highlights of Hillary Clinton's interview.
To us today, you're here in Iowa for a couple of events. You're the front runner in this state, but we're also seeing Bernie Sanders attract a lot of attention.
Well, first of all, I always thought this would be a competitive race, so I am happy to have a chance to get out and run my campaign as I see fit and let other candidates do exactly the same.
Do you see any role that you've had in this sentiment that we've seen where people are questioning whether you're trustworthy?
I can only tell you, Breonna, that this has been a theme that has been used against me and my husband for many, many years. And at the end of the day, I think voters sort it all out. I have great confidence. I trust the American voter. So I trust the American voter 100%.
Would you vote for someone that you don't trust?
Well, people should and do trust me. And I have every confidence that that will be the outcome of this election.
Can you tell me the story of how you decided to delete 33,000 emails and how that deletion was executed?
Well, let's start from the beginning. Everything I did was permitted. There was no law. There was no regulation. There was nothing that did not give me the full authority to decide how I was going to communicate. Now, I didn't have to turn over anything. I chose to turn over 55,000 pages. And now I think it's kind of fun. People get a real-time, behind-the-scenes look at, you know, what I was emailing about and what I was communicating about.
But wearing warm socks, as you said to John Podesta.
Exactly. And, or, you
working
know,
a fax machine.
Yeah, a secure fax machine, which is harder to work than the regular.
Donald Trump is also creating quite a lot of commotion on the other side. He's a friend of yours, has been over the years. He donated to your Senate campaign, to the Clinton Foundation. What's your reaction to his recent comments that some Mexican immigrants are rapists and criminals?
I'm very disappointed in those comments, and I feel very bad and very disappointed with him and with the Republican Party for not responding immediately and saying enough. Stop it.
But what about Jeb Bush's approach to that? It's different, certainly, than Donald Trump's.
Well, he doesn't believe in a path to citizenship. If he did at one time, he no longer does. And so pretty much they're, as I said, they're on a spectrum of you know, hostility.
What's changed when it comes to your approach with the media?
Well, nothing's really changed. I just have a different rhythm to my campaign. I'm not running my campaign for the press. I'm running it for voters. I totally respect the press and what the press has to do. But I wanted and was determined to have the time that I needed to actually meet and listen to people.
Have you given any thought to the woman who should be on the $10 bill?
You know, I am very torn about it. I want a woman on a bill. I don't know why they picked the $10 bill. Some people are now agitating for the $20
bill. Do you think that should be the 20?
You know, I want a woman on the bill. And I think that it might be easier to change the 20 than it is to change the 10, but we'll see.
Who's the better Hillary Clinton, Kate McKinnon or Amy Poehler?
Oh, you know, Amy's a friend of mine. And Kate's doing a great job. You're not going to get me to pick one or the other. I think I'm the best Hillary Clinton, to be honest. So I'm just going to be my own little self and kind of keep going along and saying what I believe in and putting forth changes that I think would be good for the country. And, you know, I'm not looking for ratings. I'm looking for votes.
Secretary Clinton,
thank you so much
for talking with
my
us.
My pleasure.
Let's summarize, shall we? It's a vast right-wing conspiracy. Deleting emails is fun. I never got a subpoena, although she did. And I can't work a fax machine, and I love Saturday Night Live. That pretty much is what Hillary Clinton had to say, and I wanted to speak a whole lot more about this, and I'm running out of time. So, you know, here's the thing. We will have a lot of time, more time than we could ever really want, actually, to talk about Hillary Clinton. And I'm sure, well, you never know. Oh, the press sucks. I forgot about that one. The press sucks. And we will have lots more time to talk about Hillary Clinton. So, with that, very quickly. In this week's WTF segment comes to us from Huntington, West Virginia. Officials say a West Virginia man had been keeping two deer in captivity at his home for at least a year. Multiple media outlets report that Officer Joshua Adessa with the State Division of Natural Resources says authorities discovered the two white-tailed bucks when they visited the Cabell County man's home on July 4th after receiving a tip from a concerned citizen. Adessa declined to identify the man because of an ongoing investigation. Adessa says the two deer had a healthy supply of hay available to them inside the home. Adessa says officers set the deer free, but because the animals were domesticated, they may be considered for relocation. In West Virginia, illegal possession of wildlife is a misdemeanor offense. So, the moral of the story today, it's always good to have a couple of bucks lying around. I couldn't resist. With that, I am out of here. Everyone, have a fantastic weekend. Please look for me at theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. There's new stuff there. Please go to theblacksphere.net. There is lots of great stuff by great, talented people there, so please go there. You can find me at facebook.com/BeckyNoble and on Twitter at PatriotWitch. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. Have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next time.